Welcome to the Azure Security Podcast, where we discuss topics relating to security, privacy, reliability, and compliance on the Microsoft Cloud Platform.
Hey, everybody, welcome to episode 119. This week, it's myself, Michael, with Sarah and Mark, and our guest this week is Ryan Macababa, and we're here to talk about kind of what Ryan's been up to over the last few years. We actually interviewed Ryan about 5 years ago now, and I'm saying this with a bit of a smile on my face because I couldn't get Ryan's last name right at all. The good news is we actually still have a recording of that. So at the very end, if you want to have a bit of a laugh, go and listen to me completely messing up Ryan's last name. But before we get to our guest, let's take a little lap around the news. Sarah, why don't you kick things off?
Okay, well, it's that time of year where the AI tour is starting again. So the day that we're recording this, I am packing my bags to go away to start the AI tour for the financial year 2026. So if you've been to the AI tour in previous years, you'll know it's a one-day event. We do it in various different cities around the globe. It's usually about 40 of them, so there could well be one near you. So I'll put the link. They are still being all planned out at the moment. So if you can have a look at the link to see if there's one coming near you. It does get updated. I know not every city is on there immediately. So go and have a look. And depending on when we release this one, if you happen to be in Chicago, Toronto, or Ottawa for the AI tour, I will be there. So yeah, go and have a look. There is security stuff, and you can obviously go learn more about AI and just have fun at Microsoft events. I'm biased. I love a Microsoft event, of course. So yeah, just that one from me.
Cool. So a couple updates in my part of the world. We did update the access and identity module of the Security Adoption Framework, or SAF. So these are workshops that any Microsoft Unified customer can get delivered. And so we just did a refresh of that. We're working on the security operations, or SOC ones, now as we speak. Recently published some of the learnings that we've made around AI anti-patterns and best practices, you know, obviously focused on security, but the, you know, anti-patterns are just common mistakes. You know, pattern is anything you do over and over. Anti-pattern is one that you don't want to do because it's ineffective or counterproductive. And so pop a link to the LinkedIn feed on that one so you can check that out. And then just in general, it had been a little while since I had updated the marks list. So it's an article I maintain on LinkedIn with, you know, kind of a list of a bunch of different resources that I provide, as well as other ones that I refer people to and use all the time. And so it's just aka.ms/markslist. Again, the link is going to be in the show notes. But you know, just kind of organized it, cleaned up some of the older links, the dead links, added a bunch of the work on the open group standards, was one of the big updates there. And you know, a couple newer Ignite session recordings, and you know, Zero Trust and AI white paper, you know, some of the phenomenal work for the Zero Trust practice guide, and a few others. So that's what I got this week.
All right. I have a couple of, actually I have three items. The first one is Azure Databricks automatic identity management is now generally available. I'm going to be honest, I'm not an expert in Azure Databricks, even though it was in Azure Data for a long time. It was a bit of a mystery to me. But apparently, it now has automated user provisioning and deprovisioning through native integration with Microsoft Entra ID. Anything that integrates with Microsoft Entra ID, so you've got, you know, access to those identities, as well as support for all the nice, you know, things like conditional access and what have you that come with that, is always a good thing. Ultimately, this is all about simplifying that workflow of managing identities. Next one, also from my old stomping ground, is Azure Cosmos DB for MongoDB encryption with customer managed keys is now generally available. I know we've mentioned it in the past, but now it's generally available. So this allows you to control the encryption keys, or more accurately, the wrapping keys that actually wrap the symmetric encryption keys. You can now control those because some compliance requirements require that. But remember, if you lose that key, Microsoft does not have a backup, so make sure you control that key. The last one, which is a bit of a mystery, look, I've got to be very careful what I say here, and I'm going to be really honest with you. So I'm a bit of a TLS nerd, and I'm also a bit of a TLS purist as well. So this is generally available is backend TLS validation controls in Azure Application Gateway. And essentially what it allows you to do is control certain aspects of validation of certificates. I have a philosophical issue with this. I'm sure that there are customers out there that need this while they're experimenting. I completely get that. But I do want to make sure people are aware of what they're doing when they do this. So it essentially allows you to enable and disable things like certificate chain validation and expiry date. So if you've got a certificate that's expired, then you can still go ahead and use it, and the application gateway will still allow the connection to occur even though the certificate has expired. Things like validating SNIs, there's a few other options in there as well. I don't like it. I get it. Look, I get that there's some customers who may have issues and this will get them out of a hole. I get that. Even the documentation says, we recommend keeping all validations enabled for production environments. Disabling some or all of these validations is suggested only for testing and development purposes, such as when self-signed certificates are used. I get that, but I still don't agree with it. Because if you're using self-signed certificates in development or in testing, you're not actually, especially in testing, you're not actually testing what is going to be rolled out into production. You should be using a real certificate in testing and production and development. It doesn't have to be the certificate that's used in production. It can be a certificate that's used in development and testing, but it's still a valid certificate. It still chains up to a trusted root. It may be one that's issued separately. That's completely fine, but it still chains up to a trusted root. You're doing all the certificate validation. Because if you turn this off in testing and you're not doing, say, date validation, and then in the future, the date becomes incorrect in production, now your system fails in production. Again, I get why that's there. Just be really super, super careful if you're doing all this stuff. And again, I despise self-signed certificates with every fiber in my being because they're useless. And I hear people say all the time, we just use them in testing. It's like, no, don't use real certificates that chain up to a real trusted root, but it's not the same one necessarily as used in development, but it's still, a valid certificate with valid dates and valid names, everything. And I realize someone's going to probably comment on what I just said, but anyway, that's just my philosophical perspective. But I'm right. Anyway, let's move on.
I'm right with you on the self-signed thing. I never really liked the self-signed thing.
So we're right, not just me. Yeah. Okay. All right.
So we'll both get a lot of that comment.
We'll both get the flag. Fair enough. All right. Let's move on to our guest. Now that I've got my news out of the way, as I mentioned, our guest this week, who's actually coming back from, so we're at episode 119. We last had Ryan on the podcast, episode 7. So that was July 2020. That was 5 years ago. So basically what we're trying to do here is just catch up with Ryan, see what's going on, what's changed for Ryan, and what sort of stuff she's working on, especially in the area of enterprise strategy and enterprise architecture and strategy from a security perspective. So Ryan, thank you so much for coming back. I'm very happy you've come back. But would you like to take a moment and introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. I will say that my name is Ryan Makababad. So you're still getting it wrong, but you're much, much closer. So good job. And I'm a principal security program manager. I'm at Microsoft and I'm part of the enterprise security team. And basically what I'm doing right now is working across the company to ensure that everyone is aligned on taxonomy and in understanding exactly what our requirements are from a legal or contractual or regulatory perspective, as well as what best practices when it comes to how we as Microsoft use the cloud. So yeah, that's what I'm up to these days.
So I know I still got your name wrong, but I said the name better than the very first time, right? We first met. I mean, was atrocious.
Yes, you did. You did a lot better. There was only the one syllable that you got wrong this time.
Oh, well, I'll call that improvement.
So Ryan, you're obviously you're a very busy person. I know this because we talked about this in our pre-record brief, but I mean, What is the hardest part of your role nowadays? What do you find the most challenging?
So I think that one of the things that I find most challenging and why I'm working on it right now, is like whenever you say like getting people to align on, you know, on what, you know, policy is or what, you know, our requirements are, like, that can sound really scary. But the thing is that everybody understands language differently, and we all use language differently. And so, like, when one person talks about production, they might be talking about first party. And when another person is talking about production, they might be talking about the stage in the development life cycle that something is in, right? And so if you use the same word within a policy, then now you have to provide the context of what you mean. And if you don't provide the context of what you mean, then now what you've done is sown confusion and discord amongst the folks that on the your audience that actually have to use and implement whatever policy or standard or communication that you've put out, right? So like that's probably one of my biggest things in just life in general is how we use language, because we use words in ways that they aren't intended to be used for, or we use words in ways that where we're assuming the knowledge or experience or that the understanding of the other party that is part of that communication. And so much gets lost in translation because of that assumption.
Can I just add something here? So I'm a big stickler for getting words correct in general, but certainly in security and absolutely when it comes to cryptography. Let me give an example. So I'll review things and people say, well, you know, we're encrypting the certificate. I'm like, are you really encrypting the certificate or are you encrypting the private key? Because I don't really care that much about the certificate because the certificate is public information and it's protected with a digital signature. So it can't be tampered with. So there's nothing to see there because it's nothing sensitive in there and it can't be tampered with. So do you actually really mean the certificate or do you mean the private key? And I say, oh, we mean the private key. Well, say that. You know, and it sounds horrible to say, but I'm like, just be really pedantic about what you mean. And again, to your point about assumptions, I assume, but I'm usually wrong. I assume that people know the difference between a certificate and a private key, but surprisingly, a lot of people don't.
Actually, that ties into a lot of the stuff we're doing with the roles and glossary at the Open Group, because you know, there's some things in precision within security, but there's also when you talk about governance to a security person, that means something. When you talk it to an IT person and you say governance, it means something very different. When you talk to a board member who has a fiduciary duty, you know, a relationship of trust to the shareholders, governance has an entirely different meaning to them and the CEO and, you know, CFO and a chief operating officer, et cetera. And the business operations people also have a different view of it. And so, you know, that was one of the interesting things as security becomes a mainstream part of an organization. And, you know, if you know, a business person demands 100% uptime and doesn't fund anything for redundancy or patching or whatever, and then, you know, you're going to blame the security team for something that was out of their control that you made a decision on. You know, as we sort of realize that security is a part of everyone's job, like, all of these worlds and these assumptions are colliding. It's not just within the security space, but just like language is so, so important. So 100% agree with you, Ryan.
Yeah. And I don't think that it's pedantic to say, like, say what you mean. Right. And maybe that's because I'm autistic. And so I need people. I like literally need people to say what they mean, because if they don't say what they mean, then like I'm going to completely miss like whatever passive and underlying communication is going on, whatever nuance is going on that, you know, that they are assuming that I am following, right?
And there's nothing wrong with being pedantic either. Like, that's actually a good thing, to be focused on the facts and the meaning.
Yeah, but it has a negative connotation to it, right?
Yeah, that's true. But it's one worth breaking, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I was in a conversation just recently, and I'm not going to I can't talk about all the details, but somebody on the call said, "And we need a security review." And my response to that was, "What do you actually mean by security review?" And again, I even said, "I'm not trying to be difficult to deal with, but what do you actually mean?"
Do you want a review and feedback, or do you want a sign off?
No, I'm going to go one level below that. I'm like, are you talking code review, static analysis, dynamic analysis, red team, pen test, privacy review? I mean, what are you know, compliance review? What does that actually mean? It turns out that the actual answer was all of the above. Well, in which case, we need to work out who is doing all that work and when, because all of the above is actually a lot of work.
Yeah, I think that I got really comfortable with asking people what they mean when I got really comfortable with saying, I don't know what that means. And I'll tell you that it was actually watching Bones, which was a TV show about a scientist who, she's definitely autistic, who doesn't understand like nuance, and when, you know, people are kind of trying to lead into something. And so, like, I think that I have had a lot of practice on asking people, like, what do you mean? I don't understand, but leading with, like, I don't understand what that means. Can you explain it to me in a different way? Or can you provide me with more context? Or can you expand on that? And also, like, just telling people straight up, like, hey, I'm autistic and I need more information than maybe you might be used to giving, so that I can ensure that I fully understand what it is that you're saying. And I think that that helps a lot, because then people think, you know, like, they are really interested in what I'm saying. And so they're really putting in effort to understand what I say.
Yeah. And I think no reasonable person would disagree with what you just said. I'll give you a really good example as well, is because of the role that I'm in now in the red team, I get to deal with a lot of the Azure backend. Like, you know, that thing is full of code names and abbreviations and, you know, heaven only knows what else, right? And I don't know them all. I mean, I'm learning a lot, but I don't know them all. And so I make a point of actually saying to people, hey, I don't know what the Arful Barful Gloop is. Would you mind just taking, you know, could you please explain what that is? Or I'll send a little message to someone and say, hey, what the heck's an Arful Barful Gloop? No one has a problem telling me what the things are. And in fact, there's a meeting, there's a call that we have every day. The person who hosts the call, it's a very important call, by the way, the person who hosts the call doesn't just explain for the first 15 seconds the purpose of this meeting. She explains what the purpose of the meeting is. And then there is after that, if you have any, you know, 3-letter acronyms, or in the case of Azure, 17-letter acronyms, spell them out. Spell them out on first use, because that's really important. And if you use a code name, explain on first use what that code, what that actually is, because not everyone on the call knows what all those things are. And it's like the old meme, right? It's like, I don't know what ABC is. And at this point, I'm too afraid to ask. We need to not do that. We need to make sure that everyone understands exactly what all the acronyms and code names and product names are certainly on first use.
Yeah. I mean, like, people are afraid to look, you know, like, quote unquote, dumb, and they're afraid to ask a quote unquote stupid question. And so, like, I try to do this a lot with just being like the advocate, saying like, hey, I'm going to ask, you know, what might seem like known information or what might seem like stupid questions. I might be asking for myself, but I also might be asking because I know that there are other people that don't know what that means.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, especially early in career, people are more afraid of that. So I think it's part of our obligation as experienced people in the industry to help make that okay.
I remember, this is a while ago now, but I remember it like it was yesterday. I actually said, hey, I'm going to ask this question because I know full well that probably 20 people on this call are asking the exact same question. So I asked the question. So I took the hit. You'd be amazed how many messages I got asynchronously saying, thank you for asking, because I had no idea what that thing was either.
Yeah.
And I've been around long enough that people, I don't even know how to put it. I've been around long enough that I can ask the question without putting anybody, you know, no one's going to feel bad about me asking a question. Oh, I'm so glad Michael asked that question because I've been in the company for 3 weeks and I have no idea what it is.
It's funny you say that because I have started, I have moved teams recently and there are a lot of acronyms being used that I don't understand. And I do ask most of the time, though I can understand the reluctance. And though I did have a couple of people tell me afterwards, people who've been there a lot longer saying, oh, yeah, I didn't understand that either. So, I feel this very much so.
Well, and the thing is that that's really common, you know? That like people, nobody wants to put their reputation on the line, and some people can't, right? Or they feel like they can't for whatever reason, or because of the environment that they're in, and that's totally okay. You know, like we're all at different places in our journeys to be able to ask questions that may make us feel self-conscious, or that ask questions that like may make other people have a certain perception of us. And I'm at a point in my career and just in my life that I can ask questions and recognize that people might have opinions about me because of it, but their opinions don't matter that much to me if, you know, if they can't give me grace for learning, right? If they can't give me grace for making a mistake.
You know, it's funny you should say that as well, because I think most people that know me well know that I make fun of everything. I'm always laughing at things and I always find humor in things. So when I say I don't know something, I always do it with a smile on my face. And I even say, hey, you know, I'm asking this because I know a lot of other people have no idea what the heck you're talking about either. In a nice, you know, I say that in a nice way. But yeah, you're absolutely right. So I think that's is such an important thing, is don't assume that everyone knows all the backstory, all the inside baseball stuff. That's even inside baseball, unless you're in the US, don't even know what inside baseball even means. So Mike, would you mind explaining what inside baseball is?
I'm in the US and I don't know what that means.
Well, there you go. Mike, do you know what inside baseball means? If not, I'll give you my really bad interpretation.
Just inside knowledge, I think, is probably the best way to describe it, is that, you know, only people who are in the in-group would understand this terminology. And that could be deliberate or it could be accidental. But that's really what it means, is just, you know, inside, not so much inside information, but just inside context to interpret the information you just got.
And I would argue that AI is in that position right now. There is so much technical stuff about AI that, you know, there's new words that are popping up constantly. And you need to understand what those words are if you're working in AI. And the odds are extremely good you don't know what many of those words are. I certainly don't. I still read articles once in a while, which are basically AI 101, because the AI 101 this year changed from the AI 101 3 years ago. There's things that didn't exist in AI, especially from a security perspective. So it's really important that you stay on top of some of that wording.
Yeah, and it's moving really, really quickly. And I think like the same thing needs to happen with, so like when I say that I'm you know, trying to align everyone across the company on you know, these different requirements and policies and stuff, it's because it's difficult to understand. It's because like there has been so much growth and evolution and innovation in the technologies that we've been working with, but also in you know, in the different laws that we have to exist in the different markets that we operate in. And so it's like you have to be able to distill these things down into easily digestible information, like the 101 articles that you're reading, Michael, right? So when you look at these, like a company policy, for example, you have like three different people that have three different interpretations, even though they're all reading the same thing because of the language that's used. Like it's legalese and there's nothing that translates it for you. So I will use things like Copilot or, you know, whatever I'm using in my personal life. I use a tool called goblin.tools to change the way that I'm saying something and the tone of of what I'm saying it in so that it's, you know, like friendlier or more social or more professional, because I need that in my life. It's like I just try to speak directly, and sometimes that comes off aggressively, I guess.
And I was actually just having a conversation the other day with someone, because when someone learns English as a second language, the first words you learn in English, because there's usually 5 or 10 ways of saying anything in English, are the most direct and clear and simple ones. And sometimes those are interpreted as rude or overly direct as well. And so this actually hits, you know, English as a second language speakers extra hard.
Yeah, because, well, it's a regional thing, right? It's based off of like if you grew up in the Midwest, like there are certain things that you can say that you can't say elsewhere, and vice versa, right? You can't, in some cultures, right, someone will refuse something. For example, if you offer something to them, they'll refuse it, and they'll refuse it like 3 times. And you have to keep on offering it because that's the expectation. Even though they said they didn't want it, they were being polite. And if they do the same thing to you, you have to do it in the reverse, right?
I can give you a great example of this, which is from my part. Well, from my part of the world. So in the UK, and for our UK-based listeners, you can agree or disagree with me, but what we do is if you are, and I realize I'm stereotyping here, but if you've gone around to someone's house and you've got tea and biscuits, if you say, "Would you like the last biscuit?" Basically, you're not asking if anyone would like the last biscuit. You're basically saying, "Do you care if I have the last biscuit?" Or it's really more of a statement of, "I'm going to take the last biscuit, FYI." But it's phrased as a question. And I would be very upset. Well, I'd get over it. But I would be very upset if I said, "Hey, does anyone want the last biscuit?" Because the correct, I say in inverted commas, answer to that is no, you have it. But I think it's something you would only know probably if you grew up in the UK. Yeah, if someone took my last biscuit when I've asked that question, I'd be a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, because I would totally say, "Oh, yeah, that I would love it," especially if, like, yeah. I would love it. But, you know, like, I've learned also that when somebody offers you something, that they're being polite, and so you should accept it. So that would totally not work in that situation.
Yeah.
I actually taught my daughter, and this is probably an example of bad parenting more than anything else, but I taught my daughter to not ask that question, because if you want that biscuit or the US cookie and you want it, then if you say, you know, whatever you just said, Sarah, that you run the risk of someone actually saying yes, you know, someone like Ryan saying, "Yes, I want the biscuit." Whereas, so I taught her to say, "No one wants that biscuit, do they?" Because that's a more direct way of saying, "I want the biscuit."
And no, it is. Yeah, and you're not wrong, Michael. But yeah, I was definitely brought up to be like, "Would anybody like the last biscuit?" But I don't actually want you to take the biscuit. Like,
why
that
can't
biscuit
you just
is
say,
mine.
I would like the last biscuit. Would anybody like to share
that's
it
rude.
With me? Or
would you mind if I had it?
Yeah, yes. I would mind. Still rude.
The correct response is, "Oh, no, 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 you have it." That's the correct response.
So, Ryan, this has been a really, really fun conversation where we kind of wandered a little bit away from the, I'm trying to think of a baseball analogy, but I will fail, but off of the point. Can you talk a little bit about, like, where you see this happening in the real world and industry? I'd love to hear some stories that if you could share.
So I've worked with literally hundreds of customers across various different industries, markets all over the world. And some of that was in identity when I was working in identity. Some of that was when I was working on Microsoft Defender team. And I've worked with all of these different companies and different teams within their organizations. It's so funny when you get security and IT and security and legal, or all three of them all in the same room, because they all have what at the surface level is the same requirements. But then when you start digging deep into it, they completely do not understand what each other's requirements are, because security is looking at things from a hardening point of view, right? Compliance is looking at things from a proof and attestation point of view, right? Legal is looking at things from a how do I keep my company out of hot water type of view. And then you've got privacy, which is like, okay, we need to make sure that we are in compliance with GDPR so that 4% of our global annual turnover is not something that is on the table for fines and penalties. And so like the language that they're using internally, though, completely conflicts with each other because the definitions of the language that they're using, the words that they're using, is not centralized, right? And that's been at whatever company I've been working at, and also whatever company I've been working with. Like, I can even tell you, like, in the Army, where things are supposed to be, distilled down to the lowest level so that, even a private can understand the language, like, you will get a reuse of terms and reuse of acronyms, and you'll get language that is used in different ways, but it is the same word or the same acronym. And so now you have different requirements based off of the understanding of what that word is within that organization, within that business unit at that company. And I have yet to see centralized taxonomy that has actually been saturated throughout a company. I mean, even at Microsoft, you have so many different glossaries. You have the security glossary and then the Microsoft glossary, and each, organization, the sales organization, has their own glossary. And that makes it really difficult for us to all speak the same language and reach the same goals, I think, because we're not understanding exactly what each other is saying.
Isn't the open group working on some of that stuff, Mark?
Funny you should mention that. Yes, we have a security roles and glossary standard that should be, all things going well, should be out by the end of October. We're going to be talking about it at the open group conference in early November. So we should at least have some basic baseline out there for a clear glossary on what a lot of these meant. And it did. It honestly took a lot of work to get some of these things locked in. Risk was one of the ones that was interesting. We found that there's risk as a noun, which is a very specific thing because it has to be measurable. So, probable loss, probable frequency, I think something like that. But then risk is also an adjective. And so we ended up doing a lot of work to just make sure there's clarity. We looked through the NIST definitions and the dictionary and a number of other different sources as well to resolve it. So, I can't guarantee that every word that you need is in there, but we are making some progress on burning down that problem.
So Ryan, if you could rewrite every company's security policy, what would be the first thing that you would fix?
I think that's going back to the word production that I was talking about, because we have, I think, a responsibility, not just Microsoft as a company, but like all companies that are in any way a SaaS provider or a cloud solution provider, right? To fulfill the promises that we have made to our customers and the expectations that we have aligned on how we set things up internally. And again, I'm not talking about Microsoft. I'm talking about, like, generally speaking, in my experience, if you don't have the same definition being used of production, when I say production, okay, I'm saying the environment that is customer facing and is hosting your first party apps, services, and tools that you are offering to your customers. That's production. That's your production environment. And then you have your enterprise environment, and that's where you conduct all of your operations. That's where all of your business is going on, right? But that's probably the first thing that I would fix, is just that word. It's a thorn in my side.
So Ryan, the last couple of things that we ask are, you know, first, you know, what's a day in the life look like for you? Kind of, you know, just average day in the life, aggregate, whatever works for you. And then any final thoughts you have for our listeners?
Sure. That's pretty neat. A day in my life for work usually involves a lot of research. I actually use Copilot a lot when I'm trying to put together like my thoughts and put together my research into a cohesive message, because I suffer very greatly from the blank page syndrome. So like if I don't have something to edit, then it's really difficult for me to get started. So I would say like doing a lot of research, a lot of writing, but also just communicating with folks and trying to get them to understand what the different meanings of things are, and convince them. A lot of my job is really influencing without authority, and taking what I know to be true, and distilling it into the language, and not just the language, but also the factors that are important to that person and how it pertains to what their KPIs are, what their objectives are. So that's my day to day. In terms of final thoughts, I would say that whatever it is that we are doing, whatever it is that we are experts in, like we can't expect other people to be experts in the same thing. And if we really want other people to be successful in doing the things that they are experts in, when it comes to the things that we are experts in, we put up the guardrails for them so that there isn't an option of straying outside of the left and right boundaries, right? Because we have used our own expertise to make it easy for them. So for those folks who, yeah, everyone should be security conscious and security aware, but everyone should not have to be a security expert in order to do their jobs securely. As security professionals, we should make it easy. We should enable and empower end users to do their jobs securely. Instead of being the department of no, we should be the department of yes, and here is how you do it securely. That would be my final thought and kind of what I live my professional life by. How can I make this easier on folks?
Yeah, I think that's really important. I mean, it's such a dynamic area, full of three-letter acronyms, full of code names, full of products, full of technical jargon. You just can't expect everyone to understand those sorts of things. I had a similar problem when I was in Azure Data. They would throw around database acronyms and things and technology and code names. And I had to keep going to my boss to say, what the heck's this thing? I have no clue. So yeah, I agree 100%. This has been a really interesting episode, actually. We've never really spoken much about sort of security language, whether spoken or written down. So I think this is a very interesting episode. So thanks for joining us, Ryan. I think this has been really, really cool. So let's wrap this episode up. As I said, thank you so much for joining us again, Ryan. Thank you for coming back. And to all our listeners out there, we hope you found this episode of use.
We'll do the outtake.
Yeah. Stick around and we'll do the outtake from 5 years ago where I terribly messed up Ryan's last name. I just couldn't get it right.
But can you get it right now?
Marka Babad.
Hey, there you go.
I learned quickly. All right. So again, thank you for joining us. Stay safe and we'll see you next time. Makubabad.
No.
Makubabad.
No, Makubabad.
Makubabad. What is wrong with me? Makubabad. Makubabad. I'm just slow. Makubabad.
All right. There's no R there.
Makubabad. Did I say Makubabad?
It's not bar. It's ba, like ba humbug.
Like ba black sheep.
Yes.
Marku Babad. Why don't we just have the whole podcast, me just saying your last name?
Thanks for listening to the Azure Security Podcast. You can find show notes and other resources at our website, azsecuritypodcast.net. If you have any questions, please find us on Twitter at AzureSecPod. Background music is from ccmixter.com and licensed under the Creative Commons license.